This is Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we discuss municipal law. What makes dealing with the city different? What's the role of the city government, of code enforcement? I just received a notice from the city. What should I do first? With me in the studio tonight, Lance Baer. After some 15 years as a deputy Santa Clara County District Attorney and a year as director of the Office of Citizen Complaints under the San Francisco Police Commission, Mr. Baer, for the last quarter century, practices municipal law. Ralph represents numerous municipal governments, cities, agencies, special districts throughout the region. If you have a question for my guest, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the local calling area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic, not limited to the exact point we may be in the conversation. And with that, Lance, let me welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
The bulk of the conversation I envision tonight is going to deal with code enforcement. That may be a bit later, but before we go further, I'd like to start with a few things. First, what is municipal law?
Municipal law is the practice of law representing cities and other public agencies, and it can involve a wide variety of different types of practice. Primarily, the city attorneys represent the cities in a number of different areas, but they advise the city councils. I work for the city attorneys, so I typically am not in that role. There are a number of other areas where city attorneys work, advising the various departments, defending the cities in lawsuits, handling personnel matters, drafting ordinances, and enforcing the codes, which is our code enforcement function.
In the grand scheme of things, what is the role of the city or the county vis-a-vis the state or the nation? Just what role are these entities filling?
Well, if you look at state law, the state law is focused, and we're talking about code enforcement, the state law is focused on the big picture. The state has the various codes that involve criminal behavior. But under state law, the cities are also allowed to draft ordinances that address quality of life issues in the communities, whether it's building codes, whether it's zoning codes, whether it's different codes that reflect issues involving the quality of life in the community. The local public agencies are responsible, our cities and our counties, for handling matters at the local level. So the state delegates these authorities to the counties and the cities to handle local issues at the local level.
What is it that makes dealing with a city or perhaps a special district, what makes that different than dealing with someone else?
The city has authority. So where the city has rules that it enforces or that it adopts, it is in a position where a member of the public is responsible for complying with those conditions. So the city is in the position of telling people what they can and cannot do. And it's not simply a dialogue between individuals who have a conversation about what's the right thing or the wrong thing. It's a city actually telling someone what they are required to do under these particular laws or ordinances.
So the larger behavioral scheme of things typically is done by the state, but quality of life things, things that give the cities their character, whether it's building or how you deal with your next door neighbors, things are typically a function of the city.
Absolutely. And that is done through various parts of the city government, whether it is the planning division or the building division or the police department. All of those different departments and agencies of local government are involved in dealing with quality of life issues at the local level.
I guess before we go further, talk a little bit about yourself and your practice. Just what does an attorney practicing municipal law do?
Well, focusing on the code enforcement, for example, we have interactions with various departments that are involved in enforcing their laws, and the city attorney consults with the different departments and advises them regarding enforcement options that are available, discusses some of the problem cases that the code enforcement officers encounter, and in general handles the formal enforcement, whether it is filing a civil injunction in court, prosecuting a case criminally in criminal court, handling an administrative hearing, or dealing with some type of administrative appeal. In the general practice of municipal law, attorneys advise, they review documents and contracts and agreements, and they negotiate with various parties in those types of contracts that local agencies get involved in, whether it is a construction contract or a joint powers agreement with other agencies. And they may represent the cities in actively in litigation or supervise the litigation that a city is involved in defending itself.
In the bigger picture, who generally defends the cities or the districts or whomever it may be?
In a city, the city attorney is going to be responsible for the defense of a lawsuit. In most cities of medium or small size, that's going to be handled by outside counsel, and those attorneys are vetted through the city attorney's office and will report back to the city attorney.
And similarly, who advises these cities about personnel matters?
In general, the city attorney also is responsible for personnel. Sometimes if a case is going to be heard in front of a personnel commission or an arbitrator, the city may bring in outside counsel under the city attorney to represent the city. And that outside counsel will be responsible to the city through the city attorney's office.
So we're about to turn the topic to code enforcement, which is going to make up a lot of our show. What that means to you, if you get a notice, or if your neighbors are doing something unusual, perhaps your contractor you've gone to does something unusual. Before I do, I'd be remiss if I didn't give our callers an opportunity to call in. We're talking about municipal law on Your Legal Rights and what the city can do for you, what some of the issues may be facing the cities today. Appearing with me in the studio tonight, Lance Bayer, formerly a deputy district attorney and director of the Office of Citizen Complaints. Mr. Bayer practices municipal law, representing numerous municipal governments throughout the region. If you have a question for my guest, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside of the local area, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. I see a first call is coming through. While that's working its way through, let's talk a little bit about code enforcement. Just what role does code enforcement play?
The cities primarily address code enforcement through complaints. So members of the public would contact a city code enforcement division and complain about property maintenance. Somebody is leaving a lot of trash and debris in the front yard. It could be illegal construction, and the neighbor notices that a new addition is going in the backyard, and it seems to be coming right up against the fence. It could be a zoning issue where the resident notices that there is some business that is operating in a residential neighborhood where the business seems to be acting without proper zoning clearance. So there are a number of ways that a code enforcement case can get to city government, but primarily they come from members of the public who contact the city code enforcement division and say, I'd like to complain about something that's happening in my neighborhood or something that I've observed in the community.
Who enforces codes and how?
Well, the code enforcement function can exist in different parts of city departments. So in some cities, in my experience, the police department will be handling all of code enforcement. In other cities, the code enforcement function may be split between the police department and the building division. In others, its function is found in community development or in a housing department, and there is no consistent one place where code enforcement will be found in a city setting.
I see a call working its way over here. Martin is nodding. Lisa, welcome. You're on your legal rights.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you at first. I don't know if this is a question for this topic or not about neighbor law. Does that have anything to do with the city about a fence?
Very much so. We were heading there a little later, but by all means, as I said, you never have to limit yourself to the point in the conversation we are right now. Happy to take your question, Lisa. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So I have a huge backyard, and in the very back part of it, I had a new fence put up on one side of it. It's like a 6,000-square-foot backyard. On the other side of it, the fence was already new when we moved in, or not new, but not very old. Now, in the very back, which is there's a neighbor behind me, a tree on her property pushed the fence in, and I have pictures of this from 13 years ago when we moved in. It's leaning inward towards my yard. So my fence guy said, if we put up a new fence, the same thing's going to happen, or it's going to have to, it's going to encroach into my property. So what he did was he put boards on this fence just for aesthetic purposes, new boards, without putting any more weight on it. So anyway, I talked to my neighbor and I said, the fence needs to be fixed, but, something needs to be done with the tree. Well, she verbally attacked me and said, you put the wood up there, the wood is what's doing that, blah, blah, blah. Well, now this, like I said, I bought the house 13 years ago, and I just put the fence up 2 years ago. So I have pictures of it leaning. Do I have a right to make her cut that tree?
Okay, this is a really great question, and I can give a part of an answer. First of all, the city will get involved in many cases where there's a clear ordinance or regulation that the city enforces.
Can I interrupt you? I don't know if it makes any difference, but this is Castro Valley and we are unincorporated, so I don't know if that makes a difference or not.
Well, the regulations, if it's unincorporated, would be under your county government, and the county government there in an unincorporated area would have the same type of enforcement authority as a city. So when we talk about municipal law, we also are talking about county law. Where there is an ordinance, the city code enforcement division will take a look and see if there is a violation. And if there's a violation, whether it has to do with trees, whether it has to do with fences, the city may or may not take some action. If there is no ordinance, then what you have is a private dispute. And unfortunately, I can't give legal advice in those types of private disputes because I represent the government, but okay. There are various places that people can go. For example, I don't generally in my official capacity recommend publications, but I can tell you that a lot of people go to the public library or go to the bookstores and find a book called Neighbor Law, which is published by Nolo Press. And that has been a useful tool for some people to take a look at the kinds of issues that we have. The other thing to understand is that there, what you're describing, whether it's a violation of the city law or something that affects your ability to use your property, is that this is described as what's called a public nuisance. And in some circumstances, these are public nuisances that reflect harm to a large part of the community. But in others, it's what's called a private nuisance. And in a private nuisance, this is something that really only affects one or two neighbors. And because of that, even if there is a law that's on the books, the city or the county has a certain amount of discretion, and it may choose to leave this for you and your neighbor to resolve as a private issue.
Oh, okay. All right.
Lisa, if all else fails, you might try talking to an attorney that you can reach through the lawyer referral service of the Alameda County Bar Association. They can suggest someone that could advise you, or perhaps if you do decide that you have to resolve it, everything else is exhausted and you want to take your neighbor to small claims court, they have small claims advisors at the court that could help you in filling out papers, whatever you need to do. But if you can resolve it with your neighbor informally, you're way ahead of the game.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you. I will definitely go get that book. That sounds interesting. Do you have time for one other question?
We do. We have one person on the line backed up, but if you if it's direct and quick, we can do it.
Well, I just, while you're here, I wanted to ask, there is a telephone pole in my yard, you know, bordering mine and my neighbor's yard with all of the wires. Is there any legal action I can get that to be moved?
That's something that would be between you and the utility, because that's something that probably doesn't necessarily violate one of our laws. So you'd have to deal with the utility directly.
Right.
You would also want to look and see. The overwhelming likelihood is that long before you bought your property, when that area was subdivided, the telephone company or whoever else is using that pole probably hold an easement against your property. That's a right for those wires to pass through your property. So they have a right that you would have to negotiate from them.
Okay. All right, doctor. All right, well, thank you so much. I love your program, and thank you for being here for us.
Thank you for listening, Lisa, and thank you for joining us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. From Marin, Don, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I had a question about development and design review and ministerial review. Due to the shortage of rental units, unincorporated Marin County is encouraging the building of accessory dwelling units so that either they're rented out or so that the owner can vacate his home and make that available for someone else and move into the ADU or accessory dwelling unit. The county to encourage development of ADUs. The county is enabling ADU development with ministerial review, so that you don't have to go through design review. Can you tell me what the difference is between ministerial review and design review?
Okay, so the ADU or accessory dwelling unit, or
excuse me, one moment, Don. I think your radio may be turned up a little loud. We're getting a little feedback. Can you turn your radio down for a moment?
My radio's off.
We'll try again. We're getting some feedback from somewhere.
Okay, so hopefully I can answer the question at least with a little bit of background, and that is that, as you know, if you've been following this issue, the accessory dwellings or the ADUs have been permitted and authorized under state law. So the cities and the county, in your case, the Marin County, is acting based on the direction that they've been given under California state law. Normally, when a new residence is constructed in some cities, the residence goes through a complete design review. So in some cities, for example, the design goes through an architectural review so that the architecture is consistent with the neighborhood. Not every city has that. Not every county has that. But with the accelerated permit process, the ministerial review means that the city or the unincorporated county has less authority to require changes to the plans that are submitted if they meet certain basic requirements. In other words, the decision on where to locate an ADU or how the ADU is to be constructed or what it's to look like is more under state law than it is under local regulation based on the new state legislation. I know that's a little complicated, but hopefully that answers your question.
Don, are you still with us? We seem to have lost Don, but I hope that answers your question. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. If you have a follow-up or some further info, feel free to call us back. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're talking about municipal law. What makes it different when you're dealing with a city? What's the role of the city? What's the role of code enforcement? What should I do about that notice I just received from the city? What are some of the issues facing the cities today? My guest with me tonight is Lance Bayer, former deputy district attorney and director of the Office of Citizens Complaints. Mr. Bayer represents numerous city governments throughout the region. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And I'd like next to jump to the meat of the issue. I just received a notice from the city. What should I do first?
You got a letter from the city that says that the city has determined that there is a violation of the code. What the first thing that you should do is carefully look at the letter. Do not ignore it, because the city is going to pursue some type of enforcement action if you choose to ignore it. Take a careful look at what the letter says and what it's requiring you to do. In my experience, every letter is going to reference a certain section of the municipal code, or if it's a county, it'll be the county ordinance code. And what you can do is you can go online to the agency's website. So the city's website will have a link to the municipal code. And you can find the code section that the city has stated that you are violating. Take a close look at that code section. And hopefully you'll get some idea from the letter what the city is asking you to do. If it's something where you simply didn't realize that there was a violation and it's something that can be easily corrected, that's something that you can decide to correct and notify the city that they can come by, take a look, and if there was some exterior property maintenance issue, you can show that you're in compliance with the code. If there's a conflict, if there's a legal issue, if some type of concern that you don't agree with the city, at that point you may want to get some legal advice. And in that situation, you're probably going to want to consider contacting an attorney. If you know one, then you may contact that attorney, or as we've discussed, you can contact the attorney referral service of your local county bar association and have a consultation with an attorney.
What kinds of things can happen if I simply ignore the notice or blow it off?
The city has various tools to take enforcement action. First of all, the letter may be asking for a more detailed inspection of the property. If the letter is calling for a detailed inspection, then you're going to have to decide whether or not to consent to the inspection. If you consent, then the code enforcement officer or building inspector will come through and take a look. Otherwise, what's going to happen is the city will pursue what is called an administrative inspection warrant, which means that the city will go to court and get an order, and you don't have any right to be present for that court appearance, and then the city will come back with an order ordering you to let the inspection take place.
And this is without telling you that they're going to court.
Correct. And what happens is if you just ignore the letter, there's a chance that the city is going to be pursuing that. And particularly if you tell the city representatives that they may not come in and conduct an inspection. But that's your choice. You could choose to do that, and the city will generally pursue an inspection warrant.
Seems from my perspective that if they go ahead and go to court and get that warrant, the leverage has shifted. You've given up a lot of your power.
Absolutely, because now the ability to cooperate and have a dialogue with the city becomes more complicated. When the city representatives come in and inspect the interior, and you're working towards bringing the property into compliance, then that dialogue can hopefully reach some type of resolution. But some people don't have that attitude, and they want to hold the city to its case and require the city to go through the various steps. Unfortunately, at the end of the various steps are some bad things that can happen to you if your property's in violation and you choose not to do anything. Some of those steps include, as we mentioned, possibly criminal prosecution. It also could involve some type of administrative citation, and those citations can be imposed on a daily basis. And it could involve some type of civil injunction against you that would require a legal court action that is fairly sophisticated and for the most part difficult for someone to handle without the assistance of an attorney.
We received an interesting note from a caller that wanted to ask a question without staying on the air. This happens sometimes. This caller is an attorney with some significant experience in landlord-tenant, and this caller opines, in my experience, property owners with code violations can often game the system. In response to a complaint, an inspector from the building inspector's office will come out and red tag the unit. The owner will empty the unit, evict all the tenants, wait a few months, then bring in new tenants. There doesn't seem to be any follow-up procedures for code inspections, so if the new tenants complain, they will simply be evicted, and the game starts over. What can we do to reform the system?
As far as the system as it exists, there are already some things that a person can do if they are in a substandard or dangerous unit. So if the tenant is in a unit that has code enforcement issues that are so significant, the code enforcement division will come in and begin to work on how that those issues can be abated. And in some cases, those issues can be abated by the landlord bringing the property into compliance, and there are requirements for that. But if it has to be red-tagged or determined to be dangerous or substandard, then there are tenants' rights issues that are established right in California law under the housing code. So in the housing code, there are provisions that, for example, require that the property owner pay relocation costs and 2 months' rent for the person if they are found to be unable to occupy the unit because of violation of the housing code. So California does have some provisions in law, and some of the cities that have tenants' rights legislation, rent stabilization, or other types of ordinances have put those types of protections right into the ordinances themselves, additional protections beyond what the housing code requires.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And to the caller who called in that last question, to the extent this overlaps both municipal law and landlord-tenant, I would encourage the same question next week. Next week, we will be featuring landlord-tenant. My guests next week, both longtime participants in both Your Legal Rights and the Call a Lawyer program, Sal Timpano and Jessica Chalik, each practicing landlord-tenant law in San Francisco for an extended period of time. And they might be interested in hearing the same question as to what is available both to make the tenants whole when they get evicted because of a non-compliant landlord, and what, if anything, can be done to stop this kind of game playing.
One of the things, if I can add to the issues regarding tenants issues, is that in my experience working with the different code enforcement divisions, every effort is made to keep people in their units until a property becomes so dangerous that it is considered to be imminently dangerous. In other words, that if the person remains in the property, they would be subject to immediate potential danger of serious harm because of some condition that is so significant that it has to be abated without having the tenant in place.
I'm Jeff Hayden, and you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco, where tonight we're discussing municipal law. What makes dealing with a city different? I just received a notice from the city. What should I do first? What are some of the issues facing these cities today? In the studio with me tonight is Lance Bayer, formerly a deputy district attorney and director of the Office of Citizen Complaints under the San Francisco Police Commission. Mr. Bayer now practices municipal law for nearly a quarter century and represents numerous city governments throughout the region. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you don't have to call at the moment we're talking about that one issue you wanted to talk about. You can call anytime. If you're within the subject matter, call us. You don't have to be talking at the exact same point we are in that conversation. Again, outside of the local calling area, please call toll-free at 866-798-8255. We're talking about municipal law. We have had some questions that seem to overlap our show next week. Next week, we will be talking about landlord-tenant with Sal Timpano and Jessica Chalik, both from San Francisco. Tonight, we're talking municipal law. So, we disagree. We disagree whether I'm in compliance. I've gotten a notice. I've talked with the city. Is there somebody else who can review this notice, who can talk about what's going on and maybe ameliorate the situation? If not, where do I go? I mean, who's there to defend me?
First of all, every code enforcement officer has a supervisor. And sometimes the person who is subject to the enforcement action may feel that the code enforcement officer isn't treating them fairly. The recourse within the system is to contact the supervisor and just suggest that they would like the supervisor to take a careful look. The situation becomes harder when the person has strong feelings that they are not in violation because the city has not yet chosen what type of formal code enforcement action to take. So if there's a criminal violation and the person is charged criminally, then obviously it's critical for the person to obtain legal counsel if possible, and hopefully they will obtain legal counsel, and an attorney will be able to suggest what legal defenses the person might have. But if the person is subject to an administrative citation, there's a right to a hearing in front of a hearing officer, or in some cases a board or a panel. And in those cases, there is someone that the person can talk to who is not immediately involved in city government. And hopefully it does not end up in a civil lawsuit where it's necessary to be represented in what could be a prolonged litigation over some type of code enforcement issue. But I would want to make it clear that code enforcement cases can run an extreme gamut from fairly minor property maintenance issues involving property storage, debris and trash in the front yard, or failing to comply with some of the provisions of property maintenance rules, to major construction projects that are done without permits that require significant changes, or other types of violations that are significant infringements on public health and safety. Cities are engaged in enforcement, for example, of drug and gang-related houses and other types of quality of life issues in the community that involve serious concerns, where obviously a person who is accused of maintaining that type of property should clearly seek some type of legal advice to know what their rights are related to that type of issue.
And who oversees inspections?
Well, there are a variety of different kinds of inspectors. There are property inspectors that are building inspectors that have certificates to make them experts in construction and the requirements of the various building codes. There are fire inspectors who can conduct inspections to look to whether or not there's a fire hazard. In general, California has been increasing the professionalism of general code enforcement officers. These are people who have specific training in those ordinances and laws that relate to quality of life issues. Some of them have expertise in building as well. But in general, there are a variety of different types of inspectors. There's also something called a multiple housing inspector, and those individuals are involved in looking at the common areas and safety issues in apartment complexes and multiple unit dwellings.
Shessa from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I just was recently, a couple days ago, informed that a Mr. Crave Bistro is wanting to extend its hotel business into the restaurant business with a license to have a small group live theater and alcohol, beer, wine, license, the type of entertainment would be from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. That gives me 4 hours of sleep if I'm lucky, if they quiet down after the closure right away, which they probably won't. And, you know, with their hours for extending alcohol being in the morning, then, you know, they can just go through the night. I've lived through a previous genesis of this particular corner. Being a central location in the Tenderloin of San Francisco for drug dealing, and there are still remnants of it here in the Tenderloin, right across the street. So this is all it would take to reignite that effect on my sleep.
So are you looking to know where to go for help?
It seems like it's the state of California, since it's alcohol beverage control.
Well, Shasta, thank you for your question, and we appreciate your taking your answer on the air. I think what Shasta's looking to know is where to go to oppose this permit and see what she can do while she still can.
There are multiple issues here. First of all, is there is an application process for a use in the city government. And without more information, just in general, this is one of the functions of city government, is issuing permits for businesses. Some businesses in zoning districts require what's called a conditional use permit, and those conditional use permits mean that the business can operate in that particular zone only with certain conditions. That conditional use permit may also be accompanied by other kinds of permits, such as an entertainment permit or a permit to operate and serve alcohol. Those are the local permit requirements, and there's a process in each city or county for those permits to be approved or denied. And in San Francisco, there's a set of rules, and I'm not entirely familiar with them, but there is, in most communities, a public process to deal with some of the more intrusive types of permits. In addition, there is, at the state level, permitting for alcoholic beverage, and those sometimes work together with the local zoning, and sometimes they are completely independent of it. But in any case, the applicant requires both types of permits, both the local zoning permits and other types of local permits, and the permit from the State Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. And so the caller really should hopefully become aware of where each of those applications is in the process, and whether or not there's still time available to respond and to comment and to make her desires known. Once the business is established, if the permit is issued, that doesn't mean that those issues go away. First of all, there may be violations of the conditions of approval. And one of the things that we do in code enforcement is enforce conditions of approval under use permits. And the other thing that can happen is that there may be violations of general ordinances and laws relating to noise and to other types of nuisance behaviors that can be enforced either under the city codes or under codes that are enforced by state law and the district attorney's office.
Chessa, I don't know if you're still on the line, but thank you and appreciate your question. We've been talking about code enforcement, my dealings with the city. If I'm not in compliance or they say I'm not in compliance and where I can go and what I might face if I don't really straighten up my act or show them that perhaps I already have. But there are times when the city can be there to protect me. And I'd like to shift gears a bit and talk about times when the city can really be my best friend. The first issue that comes to mind, I've hired a contractor who just doesn't seem to be up to snuff, doesn't seem to be complying with either the local or state laws. Can you help?
Well, one of the things we can do is determine whether or not that contractor is licensed under the state license board. And we can also determine whether or not the work that was done required permits that weren't obtained. If you contact the city and ask about that, hopefully the city is going to want to work with you to get that property into compliance rather than going up against you to try to take some type of enforcement action. In my experience, when people reach out to the city because they've had this type of experience, for the most part, cities can be very cooperative in working with you, not only to try to get your property into compliance by working with you to get the permits and the approvals that you need, but also to take the appropriate actions involving the unlicensed contractor.
Don from Marin, welcome back. You're on the air.
Hi, I apologize for getting dropped off. We lost power because of the storm when I was talking with you about ADUs or accessory dwelling units. I got the sense that you were about to say something about location and that the state doesn't dictate where you can locate an ADU. Is that within the property, or are you talking of, in other words, can they, as long as you obey setbacks, can either the county or the state specify where on a piece of property the ADU must be located? Or
this is something that I would want to research before I could give you a good answer. But what I will tell you is that the big change that happened was that the state, through legislation, actively became involved in the land use issues relating to accessory dwelling units, and that when the state got involved, some of the new state laws go and cancel out some of the previous zoning regulations, so that under the new state laws, some of the various city and county zoning rules go away, and the state law takes over. And I'm not exactly sure about exactly where that comes in, so I can't advise you as to the specifics, but I do know that the changes in the state law have led to significant changes in how cities and counties view the land use issues regarding accessory dwellings.
Well, in particular, if a driveway crosses a stream, the Public Works Department, or it may be CEQA, I'm not sure, requires a replacement of an existing culvert with a bridge if you go through a design review. But with under the new ADU law, they allow you to go through ministerial review instead of design review. Does that mean that the culvert would not have to be replaced with a bridge?
I think it all depends on what the state law says. And if the state law supersedes the local ordinance regarding zoning or public works, there could be a change. But you'd have to first take a look at what the contents of the state law are.
Don, this might be a good question for an attorney that practices in real property, because in that particular subject area, they're going to be up to speed on what that state law says and how it relates to local laws. Whereas when you talk to somebody with a broader look at all laws that might affect a city, they may not be up to speed with that particular law until they have to be. But candidly, this has been going on for generations, where the state will take a look from time to time at various laws with regard to the use of property. They'll want to make property available, whether it's low-income housing that happened a generation ago, and they limited the city's ability to zone to restrict low-income housing. They wanted more of it available on the market. Now, again, they're trying to find ways to ease the housing crunch. So yeah. Whether it's bills that didn't pass last year, such as taking away the city's ability to limit housing near BART lines or transportation corridors, that did not pass. Other areas did pass, and it does take power away from the cities. And what you need an attorney to help you figure out, maybe a realtor can help you figure out, is whether that existing local ordinance can be harmonized with the new state law so that it still takes effect, or whether you're free from that city ordinance right now because of the state law, and maybe there's less restriction on you. But again, that's really more of a real property question. Somebody practicing in that specific area can give you better advice.
And I will say that when there are changes that are very technical and they're not broad brush but are specifics as far as setback rules or design review, even the most experienced lawyers in various fields like this where there have been major changes, they're going to want to take a look at the actual statutes and read them and compare them and determine whether or not they can advise you that you can or cannot take a certain position. I was taught early on that even in areas of the law that I am extremely experienced in, much of the time I'm going to want to look at the statutes themselves before I give some specific advice.
Well, I guess my question I was really trying to answer is, what is the difference between ministerial review and design review?
Ministerial is basically that it is does not go through a full process. Ministerial sometimes means that it's going to be handled over the counter, meaning that it's not going to have any specific detailed review, although it does require that plans be submitted that are consistent with the requirements of the building codes. It may not have any discretionary review. In other words, once the submittal meets the basic requirements, it has to be accepted ministerially rather than subject to a discretionary review process with hearings and an opportunity to contest.
Don, what I would suggest is you might try us back in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we'll be back with Call a Lawyer Night. I will seek out and see if we can find somebody knowledgeable in real property that can answer your question very specifically, one-on-one, give you better guidance than we can in this on a broader look at municipal law tonight.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate your help.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. We talked about the contractor that I've hired that might not be in compliance with local or state laws. What about my neighbors? My neighbors behind me just erected a weird structure. It's close to the property line. It's emitting weird lights at all hours of the day and night. What can I do? Where do I go?
Once again, this is a perfect situation to contact the local city code enforcement division. And the code enforcement division will conduct its inspection, and its investigation will involve taking a look at the property, taking a look at the structure, and in some cases going back and seeing whether or not we have some original plans for what was constructed at the time that the structure was originally built, so that there's a way to take a look at what's there now and what was there when the property structure was approved.
And this also brings to mind, if you could give us a brief description of what a zoning ordinance is.
Zoning ordinances are restrictions on land use. And that means that there are only certain types of uses that are permitted in particular locations. That doesn't mean that every property in that zone is going to be used in the way that the zoning map requires, because there are previous existing nonconforming uses. Sometimes we call those grandfathered. And in some situations, a property owner can have a use of a property that was legal at the time that the previous zoning existed or before any zoning existed, and that property can continue to remain as a grandfathered or legal nonconforming use until there is a time when it no longer is used for that purpose and that use goes away.
So an example of that might be when my house is built, a door that swung outward didn't have to have a big landing, and today it would. So if I use it in that way, I'm probably okay.
Right. So that is different than zoning. It's legal nonconforming for building codes. And those also are allowed for the most part unless the building becomes substandard or dangerous. So as long as the building isn't considered substandard or dangerous, then for the most part, unless there are major changes to the building, you're going to be able to keep that structure under the original conditions that it was built.
Well, we've run out of time. I want to give you a minute or so to sum up any last thoughts you had.
One of the things that comes to my mind is that the public has the idea that code enforcement can be something that is going to be a letter that they receive or something that they might be able to ignore. But for those people who think that the city is going to go away, in my experience, the city is not going to go away. And to ignore the letter or to think that the property owner can wait out the city and the city will just forget about the code enforcement case, that's very unlikely.
And that will be the last word, Lance. Thank you. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I am Jeff Hayden. Our topic tonight has been municipal law. What makes dealing with the city different? What is the role of city government? What do I do when I get that citation in the mail? My guest tonight has been Lance Bayer of San Francisco, who represents many cities throughout the state of California. Lance, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where we'll be joined by Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano, both of San Francisco, who will be here to discuss landlord-tenant law. In 2 weeks, our Call a Lawyer feature will return to Your Legal Rights. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. And for production assistant Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Our thanks to you for listening, and have yourselves a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.